Please welcome our first speaker, Hannah, from Lawrenceville, Georgia, please.
Hello. I'm an addict named Hannah.
Hey.
I have some notes on my phone because I get lost, and we're just gonna ride with it. It's gonna be fun. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm Hannah. I'm from Lawrenceville, Georgia, and a conscious contact for me, and if you don't know where conscious contact comes from in Narcotics Anonymous, it's the 11th step. And it reads, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And if you heard me read that and it sounds a little different, it's because my conscious contact with God is not with a man. And so I do not read the 11th step with the male pronouns. That is not how I work. That is not how I operate. That is not how my conscious contact is. My conscious contact is with a God that presents as a woman, but is occasionally masculine presenting, and so therefore probably non-binary, and I'm okay with that. God is calm and kind and present, and so when I am calm and kind and present, I am usually in conscious contact with my God. That's how it works for me. It should be known that when I got clean, I spent the vast majority of my life in and out of Atlanta, right? But when I got clean, I got out of rehab and I landed in Philadelphia. I was living with my brother up there, and my first meeting outside of rehab in Narcotics Anonymous was in Philly. And I don't know if you've ever been up north, but in Philadelphia, it is a place where people are not all that nice. They're not nice up there, but they are incredibly kind. And in Atlanta, people are real, real nice, but not always very kind. You know, it's like the difference between Southern and Northern culture. And so I learned very quickly that I could be myself, and I can be abrasive and loud. I'm opinionated as hell. I'm overeducated. I'm tattooed. I'm foul-mouthed, and I don't give a fuck most of the time. And yet, I could be incredibly kind. I was the kind of person that would tell you to your face that what you were doing was incorrect and your children were going to be taken away, and also be the one that helped get the needles out of your house and throw them out in a dumpster that night. That is how I operate. I was raised in the South. My father is, to this day, a Southern Baptist pastor. I do not like the God he has. I don't want the God he has. That is not how my third step works. But I am truly grateful that being raised in that kind of culture meant that I established a relationship with God from a very early age. And despite the fact that I no longer believe the way that he does, that conscious contact never severed, even in my addiction. I still believed God was there. I didn't know how I believed in God. I didn't know what that would look like or what conscious contact might mean for me. But I knew that God was there, God was present, and I wasn't alone. And so when I got clean, that contact remained. And I was very lucky in that aspect, that my religious trauma of my childhood, and there was plenty, did not mean that I had decided to turn away from that thread of consciousness that I had. And so consciousness developed slowly over the time I've been clean. I got clean on January 3rd of 2007. I went from not knowing if I even believed in God, but knowing that some kind of contact with the universe was there, to very quickly realizing that God was real for me, and that the still, quiet, calm, kind voice was present. And if I listened to it, it would take me to incredible places. And that meant that at a year and a half clean, I was trying to figure out what I believed, and I was going to church on occasion with different people in recovery, and all these churches were not what I believed, right? And that is because when I got clean, it was a week before my first anniversary, and there was a blizzard in Philadelphia. And this woman named Tina E., who is dead and gone now, who is the most masculine presenting gay woman, who drove a 97 Camaro, picked me up in a thunderstorm of a blizzard, thunderstorming in the snow, and picked my ass up and got me to a diner so I wouldn't use. And as we're driving and swerving in a foot of snow, goes, "We have to surrender to win!" And she saved my life. And she was the opposite of what my parents would have said was God's work in this world. And my God was too big for that bullshit. And so Tina E. changed my perspective on what could and should be God's hand in my life. And so I was going to all these churches that didn't believe Tina E. was that way, and I was arguing with them. Like, I knew the Bible then better than any of those people did. I was a pastor's kid. I knew that shit. And so I was arguing with them and figuring things out. And I heard this woman come in, and she was speaking, and she was talking about how God had led her to Myanmar, which is this country in Southeast Asia. And I looked over at she wasn't my sponsor anymore, but she was still one of my best friends. I looked over at Jill, and I said, "Jill, I think God wants me to go to Thailand or go to Myanmar." It was Myanmar. And she looked at me, and she's like, "Hannah, you are crazy." And I was. And there was no way to get to Myanmar. There's like a military junta, right? I tell this story all the time because it's this thread of how God works in my life. And so I got into this hyperfixation on figuring out how the fuck I was going to get to Myanmar. And I was like, I could get into the Peace Corps. But to go into the Peace Corps, I have to go to college. And I dropped out like real bad. And so I started applying for college again, and I got into college, and I was moved. And this all happened within like 30 days. People thought I was insane. I probably was. I am insane. It's cool. And I applied. I got in, and I moved to college all within like 35, 40 days, something crazy like that. I moved in, and I was on campus for like 2 hours when I met this woman. I was like, yeah, I'm coming to college so I can get into the Peace Corps and go to Myanmar. But I can't really go to Myanmar with the Peace Corps. You can only go to Thailand because apparently there's been a military coup and it's really dangerous. I'm going to sneak in somehow. And she was like, oh, my boyfriend was in the Peace Corps. He's actually taken a trip from the college to go to Thailand like in 6 months. Do you want to go? And so by listening to the still small voice, within 6 months, I had gotten to Thailand. And then I went a second time. And then when I graduated from undergrad, which, by the way, I studied religion with an emphasis on ancient language. So I read Greek and Hebrew and Latin. And I was like, learning Thai will be a walk in the park. It's fine. I sold everything I had, and I moved to northern Thailand after I graduated. And there, I worked on some of the translation for some of the texts we have in Narcotics Anonymous for Thai. I didn't read Thai, but I was helping the Thai speakers figure out which words in Thai to use based on how we... It's a long story, and it's really nerdy. If you want to hear about it, I'll tell you. But we did all that, and I had to renew my visa. And to renew a visa, you have to cross a border. And the military junta wasn't as dangerous anymore in Myanmar, and so I crossed over into Myanmar, and I got my passport stamped. And I talk about it all the time. There are three things I did in Myanmar. I bought some roasted chestnuts, I bought some cigarettes, and I took a shit in Myanmar, and then I crossed back over. And in 24 hours, I'd gotten a phone call that my brother's cancer had returned, and he needed me to be his medical power of attorney because my parents are shit. And I left Thailand, completing what I felt was my call to go to Myanmar. Because that still small, kind, calm voice put me in a place where instead of $60,000 in debt in grad school, I was instead $5,000 ahead with the funds I had raised to move to Thailand. And I came home. I came home to Atlanta, and I took care of my brother. And on my 5-year anniversary date, he passed away. Always has to steal my thunder, you know? Older brothers doing that shit, dying on my clean date like an asshole. But later I did go to grad school. I got a master's degree. I became ordained clergy, and not the kind that my father did. See, I've never really been good with men telling me what to do. They've been telling me what to do my whole life, and they can fuck right off with that noise. And my 11th step, right, preach, my 11th step tells me that to actively resist the world and what the world tells me I can be is how I maintain my conscious contact. And to resist means that I am going to become ordained when they told me I could not. It means I am going to raise the funds and move abroad when they tell me I cannot. It means that I am going to learn a whole new language just because I can, to translate shit I don't fully understand because I can, even when they tell me I cannot. It means that I am going to always err on the side of the oppressed, which means that my work, my daily, day-to-day work is not in a church setting or as a chaplain, but instead in social justice, where I work every day to serve the rights of Georgians whose rights are being infringed upon at a nonprofit law firm. It means that every day when there is a protest, I am actively involved in some way. I have marched against and faced police and riot gear, and I give no fucks. I have been put in handcuffs for the rights of others because that is how I maintain my conscious contact. It means not being afraid of what the world tells me I should be, and instead saying, watch me. And it is hard, because when you're telling the world to watch you, it means that the world will judge you. It means they will tell you you are doing it wrong over and over and over and over and over again and over and over and over and over again. You have to believe inside with your conscious contact that you are right. And that is hard. Over and over again, I was told I could never stay clean. And every day, just for today, at 18 years, 7 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, I have told them to fuck right off. It means that when I am in protest movements where everyone is telling me I'm doing it wrong, that sometimes 5 years later, I'm told I did it right. And that happened because when I was in grad school, I don't like people in charge. It's a problem. And sometimes it's not. And in my grad school, it was progressively becoming more women and progressively becoming more Black and more Asian. There was a diversity in that school that they had never seen before. And where we ate lunch every day, it was surrounded by portraits of all the retired professors. And all of them were white, and all but one was a man. And we told the school we didn't like really like men watching down on us while we were eating. It was kind of uncomfortable. And they didn't agree, and they refused to take them down. And so one night, about 2:00 in the morning, me and a friend snuck in with a 40-foot ladder, and we covered all the portraits with black trash bags. And then we wrote the portrait manifesto, and we printed it and put it all over the school. And the next day, I got a Facebook message because I refused to answer my emails. And it was like, this is the president of your school's secretary. Please come in to speak with the president as soon as possible. Somebody had ratted me out. And I don't know about you, but I come from a place where we don't rat. Fuck them hoes. And I went in, and for 2 hours, I sat with that president, and I would neither confirm nor deny my involvement, because if I had confirmed it, they would have kicked me out, and if I had denied it, she would have found a way to show that I was lying and kicked me out. And for years afterwards, everyone told me how I did it wrong, despite the fact that 2 months later, the portraits came down. Despite the fact that 4 months later, portraits of the current student body started coming up around the school. And this past year in May, I went to my works gala. You know, we have one of those big hootie flooty fundraising events. And I ran into the current president. The old president didn't last very long. I told one of his assistants who was there that I finally outed myself. I figured they couldn't take my degree away, you know, 10 years past when I had gotten it. And told them that I was the one who had written the portrait manifesto. And the president, he went and told the president, and the president was in tears and told me that I was a visionary and a leader. And it was the first time someone in power had told me that what I had done was right. The still, small, quiet, calm, kind voice is not always nice. Have you ever had someone look at you and go, oh, baby? because it's really kind, but it's not very nice because you know exactly what they mean. You know, it is an honesty and a truth that is balanced with this compassionate directness that does not falter and does not waver. And that is very difficult to maintain when everyone is telling you you're doing it wrong. I've gotten very good at it, sometimes to my detriment, because sometimes when I really think I'm right, I'm not. That does happen on occasion because we're human and we're fallible and we're broken. And just because we have a conscious contact does not mean we are spiritually evolved to be perfect. Just ask my partner. He'll tell you. But it does mean on a consistent basis that I have the ability to see what is right and forge that path regardless of what anyone tells me. It means that I set boundaries in Narcotics Anonymous. It means that there are certain people that I don't let hug me, and I don't particularly care if you like it. It is my body. I did not get clean so that I had to hug every person that I didn't want to hug. I had to do that shit as a kid, and it really damaged me. I'm not going to do that anymore. It means that when I am at a meeting and someone is crossing boundaries, I'm going to politely let them know that they can share at a different time and we'll get with them after a meeting. And it's going to piss them off, but it is kind to the people who are trying to get recovery in that meeting. And that is what I'm going to do. It means that I'm going to cut someone off when the timer goes off, if that is what my home group has decided, because that is a group conscience. And it means that we keep the boundaries that we have put in place. Even if I don't always agree with that boundary, because conscious contact for me does not mean conscious contact for the group. And I have to let myself and my individuality go sometimes to support what is good for the group. And that sucks. I don't like it. I like me today. And I think me is pretty great. But when I am in a group setting, I have to let go of that individual need to forge a path and realize that sometimes greater minds and more minds and more contact means that we make better decisions. Sometimes, not always. I don't feel that way at work right now. I feel like my boss is kind of a weirdo. He's not making great choices, and I'm right. I am right, actually. But I'm not the boss, so I don't get to make that decision. And so when I'm in that kind of situation where my conscious contact tells me I know what is right and I know how to forge the path forward, and someone above me who is an authority tells me that that is not correct and it is my livelihood on the line, and that livelihood supports 4 children and helps support my household with my partner, I can't just go off and do what I think is right. Sometimes I have to make the decision that conscious contact is not that conscious contact, that forged path, that need to be right, is not always in the best interest of my family. That's actually been really difficult for me, because when I had a wee tiny baby in grad school, I could forge that path. If they kicked me out of school, I'd find another one that liked me. But in this economy, in this market, I can't just forge a path and get kicked out or fired from work and think that I'm just going to find another one. I have to take careful, cautious steps. And that's part of my evolution of my conscious contact, is that sometimes a bull in a china shop, which is really what I am most of the time, if you want things to change up and you want to be called out, you just call in Hannah. She'll get it done. But learning how to be softer with how I deliver and learning how to accept that I don't get to just forge whatever path I think is right because I am right, has been hard, but is necessary. Humility is part of conscious contact, and that's not something I realized for a long time. And humility, I liked how the speaker said it last night, it did not mean that I am humiliated. It means accepting exactly who I am, where I am, how I am. And I might be right, but I am not the boss. And I might be right, but in my relationship, I am not in charge. It is a partnership. I might be right, but my child is still a real human with real human emotions. And I have to figure out how to deliver reality to him or them in a way that is not the way my parents did it. And that, I don't like it. It's uncomfortable. And I've realized that when I am uncomfortable, that discomfort allows me to grow. It allows me to grow. And growing and growth is rarely... You ever marinate a steak? You know when you marinate a steak for a long time, it actually changes the nature and the fiber of the meat? Like, it just changes it up. So when you actually grill it or cook it, it's more tender, it's more tastier. I'm just marinating right now, y'all. And changing the texture of who I am is not comfortable. But I don't think conscious contact means that I am just this calm, zen-like figure who is always just attuned to God. Instead, I think it means I am uncomfortable, and sometimes I'm an asshole, and sometimes I'm a jerk, because I'm learning how to change the texture of who I am to be something calm and kind and connected. And I feel like that's a pretty good place to be. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. At this time, I'm going to ask DM from Cooksville, Tennessee to come.
Hey, I'm D. I'm an addict. Hey. Move this up a little bit there. Yeah, I'll probably wander all over the place, but that's what I do. Anyway, so I'm D. I'm an addict. Thank you. Conscious contact. I feel like I just made conscious contact with you when I practice anonymity. Okay, because I'm going to look at conscious contact in all the different, well, some of the forms I learned how to practice it in this program. Conscious contact in anonymity. You know, it says a basic text turns the I into we. And so, see, that's allowing me to become part of something, part of this fellowship, part of this program. See, I separated myself in active addiction for 30-plus years. I didn't get clean until I was 50 years old. You know, I've got a large background of incarceration, homelessness, unemployability, all those wonderful things, because I always was separate from. I could not find a way to connect to people, definitely not to a God of my understanding. I had no understanding of that. I had a lot of thoughts, you know, a lot of knowledge of things, but I didn't know how to apply any of those. And I definitely didn't know how to connect with people. I ran from everything as soon as it wasn't what I thought it should be. Expectation and resentment was the way I lived, you know, and it was all fantasy. You know, for my entire life, I lived in fantasy. I could not connect because I didn't know how to live. It wasn't through this until I came to this program and I connected with you guys that things started getting different, you know, and it came through action. It says it's a program of learning. It says it's a program of action. So those are the things that started allowing me to connect and through conscious contact. It all came through the steps, you know, a lot of different, there's so many different aspects that I could talk about in this program that worked on me and for me by practicing them, but you know, I had to be willing, the basic, that how of the program, honesty, open mind, and willingness, I had to learn how to do those things and then do them. You know, that's one of the things I learned from getting a sponsor. I remember, like, my sponsor early on, I started calling him, and, you know, he was like, just call me. Tom Martin, man, I didn't know how to talk. It took me like, I don't know, 6-8 months before probably I was able to have a real conversation on the phone. I'd do the check-ins because that's what I was told to do. Like, hey, and hang up. I remember I tried to text, and he's like, no, don't text, call me. And see, what it was I was having to make a conscious contact with him. You know, and that started having a little breakthrough with me by continuing to do it. And none of this happened overnight for me. You know, so I kept, like, hearing, well, pray on it. That was one of the things I was told very, very often, because I'd come up with some crazy shit, or think it was crazy shit, but it was pretty standard shit, you know, come to find out. And he would say, like, pray on it. So I started doing the things that I was told, you know. I heard a lot about rebelliousness, and that's how I lived for a long time. I mean, I had inciting riot charges in prison, you know, I beat them. But, you know, that was what I did. Yeah, you know, I was always living in the shadows because I was scared to death that I would fail in making connections. And I didn't know any of that until I did step work. oh, step work, hey, you know, I had to go ahead. And I remember, I'm going to tell you all this, my favorite step was step 11. When I got to step 11, something had happened in my life for the first time, and it had been happening, but I hadn't identified it, you know, that I was having a conscious contact with God of my understanding, because I'd been putting in work and seeing evidence of these things in my life, and I knew that I was loved, which I didn't believe that. I'm getting a little choked up over that, because see, I didn't believe that my entire life, ever since I was a child. Yeah, there was a lot of trauma in my childhood, you know, so that connection with God came to me through working the steps. See, I was able to do some stuff I'd never done, which was look at myself and own my part in the things that I had done in my life. And also look at the things that had happened to me. I got to recognize and own some of those. And then as I worked the steps, I got to forgive and be forgiven. And that was a very important thing for me because, like I said, I used all those things. I used anger, which is based in fear. I used anger to drive me over and over and over again away from anyone who loved me, including my children. You know, and today, that's different. I've got a relationship with one of my children. One I do not. My clean date is 7/28/21. And I have not in my life since age 12 to 50, when I was doing a thorough four-step, my first four-step, I was looking at the amount of time that I ever had clean from that period of time, and I couldn't get over 3 months, you know, ever in my life. You know, 4 years clean, man, it's a completely different thing. See, but I'm grateful that I was only given one promise in this program. Stop using, which I was like, woohoo, we're done. You know, I've stopped using, but it wasn't that. Lose a desire, that happened too. And it's in that find a new way to live that everything changed for me. You know, because I put in the work and I continue to put in the work. But I'll talk a little bit about my connection with my higher power. You know, I love the fact that it's told to us something loving, caring, and greater than myself. And I've found that. I've found that in my life. I find that through the people of Narcotics Anonymous too. See, my God works through y'all. Every morning that I get up, before I interact with y'all too, I connect with my higher power. Because when I wake up, guess who's still there? Me. You know, hey, I'm sleeping with myself, cool. You know, but these are the things that I do. I was told early on, and I'm so grateful that people shared their experience with me. See, what works for you is not going to work for me. I have to develop my own experience that I can share with you. That's something else I learned from this, that I don't put my God in a box, because the things that have happened in my life are just absolutely amazing. Because see, I can live with myself today, and I can stay in one place and be an asset to other people. I was never capable of that. It just blows my mind to see how far I've come in my life in the last 4 years. Like I said, 4 years ago, I was in jail. I hadn't made it to treatment yet. I stopped using in jail because, well, we ran out, you know. And I'd gotten into a treatment facility and was shipped off, you know, and do my last 30 days in a treatment facility. And in there, I heard the message, Narcotics Anonymous. And from there, well, it wasn't all because of my choices. Other people had to make some choices that allowed me to be the place I needed to be to do the work on myself, and they guided me. And so that was just one of those things that, you know, I believe in this synchronicity, this thing that things line up at different times. But if I'm not working a program and being clear about the things happening around me and doing this check-in daily, I don't believe I'll continue being aligned with what I consider is God's will for me. You know, in the third step, you know, I love that where we ask, you know, take my will and my life. That's my thoughts and my actions. I'm not telling anybody to do that. I'm asking. That's where I get to do the ask in the third step. Then I get to do some work in the fourth step where I'm putting it all out there, and then sixth step, identifying things and then asking. In the seventh step, it says this is where we stop intellectualizing the process. That stood out to me because, see, I'll think myself into the grave. I will. I mean, I will separate myself from you in a heartbeat. I will judge you. I'll determine, and I'll, even worse, I'll judge myself. I have no business standing up here. You know, when I got here, I was asked to step in and do this. Now, same thing happened last year. Last year, when I was asked to speak, it was the topic was God's will, not mine. This year it's conscious contact. Huh, sort of a theme going here. You know, maybe I need to keep talking about this and working on this in my life. See, I look at it as this is a reminder to me about what I need to do. The work is laid before me. It's up to me to do it. I get called by this program to work it. It's an invitation for me to become better. It's up to me to do the work and get there. You know, I don't know. That's just what's happened in my life. The conscious contact that I have today is with people. I have a lot of friends and a broad network, and that was nothing. Now, I had a network of people that would change consistently in active addiction because, you know, I'd drive you the hell away. You wouldn't answer the door. I would go to trap houses. This is no joke. And they would, there's one place I can remember, they would throw an eight ball out the window for me to go away. They wouldn't let me in the door because I wouldn't leave, you know. And cops would be there before long. So, you know, people would just like, and that's sort of crazy if you think about it, like giving me stuff to just go away. You know, that's who I was. And today, that's still in me. That's still in me if I choose to, you know. I don't always see everybody and go like, oh, I love them. You know, I've got to work on that. And that's where the principles in this program come into play. I'm taught how to live if I choose to do that. See, these principles aren't something that just happened. Honesty, man. I think addiction is a disease of lies, too. I will lie to myself. I will lie to you. And I'll lie, you know, to everybody who loves me if I don't work on it, if I don't practice, if I don't do the surrender daily. That's for me. You know, I got to get up and ask for guidance because I don't believe that I'm well. And, you know, I love that you brought up the word insane. Hey, that's me, you know. So people who know me and know my past, and what's funny is I'm sitting here looking around, I see more than one person that I've been incarcerated with. I see more than one person that I've used with. I see more than one person that knew I was dangerous to be around. People that I considered friends at one time during active addiction who stopped talking to me in that life because of the way I lived. Today, those same people talk to me, or, you know, we contact each other because of the way we're living today. We share our experience. We encourage each other. We do it together. It's that conscious contact I make with you that allows me to get better. But it's only through my work on my conscious contact with the God of my understanding. I do have some understanding of my God today. But you know what? I put work into that. In any relationship, that's contact. See, I have to think about it. I have to see where I'm failing you, where I'm doing well. That comes in that 10th step that I get to do daily. I don't do it daily the way that you do. And none of us do it exactly the same. And that's the great thing about this program, too. Through that conscious contact, I get to see myself grow. I get to know that I can stay clean through anything. I believe that today. These things that I have ingrained in me came through work. My faith is one of my strongest things that I have. I'm getting choked up about that because I did not have faith in anything my entire life. I did believe. I had faith in an idea that I was cursed. You know, because it was always somebody else's fault for all the shit I was doing. You hurt me, so I'm going to do this. I'll hurt you back and show you more powerful. And that never worked. That just hurt me more and more and more. Today I know I'm loved. I'm married. I got married just a while back. My wife is not one of us, but she is one of us. She's a human being. I oftentimes will forget that what I'm doing when I'm talking about that I'm an addict is I'm acknowledging the disease that I suffer from. It doesn't make me less than anybody else in this world, But I have found through this program that I'm given an edge on many people in this world, because I'm given on a constant basis the opportunity to work these spiritual principles that I learned through the steps and the traditions. See, I was told this when I came in, and it's not programmed necessarily, but it really would need to be said to me. It said that if I want to learn how to live with myself, I need to work the steps. And if I want to learn how to live with the rest of the world, I needed to work and study the traditions. And it was made very clear to me that I had a large history that I couldn't live with the world. They kept putting me in boxes. I put myself in those boxes, I come to find out. You know, and that those things that happened to me saved my ass time and time again, and many, many, many other people. Today I do have a gratitude toward the things that happened in my life, but see, what I've been given is a great reservoir of pain, a great reservoir of things I do not want to engage in my life. My life is not one that I don't live perfect. Anyone who knows me knows that. You know, once again, it goes back to that insanity. My thinking is still, but man, I'm so much better. I'm so much better. Better than I've ever been in my life. Way farther than I ever imagined I could be in my life. I'm grateful for where I'm at in my life. Gratitude and that golden hinge upon which my recovery swings is also an essential part of me having conscious contact. Because a state of humility is something that I need to live in. Once again, it goes back to not being humiliated, but it has to do with me knowing that I'm doing okay. I'm capable of loving. I'm capable of being loved. You know, and being someone that, I got a real thing with, like, I try not to be late to anything. I will get there early. You know, it's these little nuggets that have developed that I really find essential to my, because I want to be someone that if you call and I'm like, yeah, I'll help you, that you can count on it. And how that looks, though, may not be the way that you think, because I am guided by my higher power. I ask for that, and I see that. I see it through people, places, and things that happen all the time around me. You know, I'm given a life before me that I get to engage in and love on people. And like I said, you know, I have two children. I have a son that I've got a pretty awesome relationship with today, who I completely abandoned for many years. I have a daughter that we've had a couple of conversations, and she's told me she loved me. Do we interact? No. You know, but the thing is that that's so much more than I had before. So much more. And I have faith that that relationship will get better if I do it in God's timing, not mine. That's one of those things that I believe in, because my timing was always, I want what I want, and I want it now, and I'll still do that same shit today. You know, I'll do it at work, I'll do it at home, I'll do it, period. I've got to pay attention to that. I'll think it, but I try not to operate much, because I really have faith that a God of my understanding wants me to have happiness, joy, peace, serenity. You know, these things I never had in my life. It's been given to me by the work that I put through this program and working on that relationship that I have with my higher power and with you guys. You know, not participating in this program is completely my choice. I can do that at any time. I'm free to do whatever I want. This one guy in my home group used to say, or he's like this good old timer who would go, I'm a mind reader, I can predict what all of you are going to do as soon as you leave this meeting. And it was like, ugh. He's like, whatever the hell you want to do. It's just trying to figure out what you want. Do you want to get better? Well, come to the meetings, get a sponsor, work the steps, study the traditions. Hey, there's not a lot that's suggested to us in this program, really. And, you know, I do believe, now, you know, not what everyone tells me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, do I take to heart and practice? Because I'm given a freedom in that as well. I found my people within my people. You know, they're the people who are working the program. And they work it in all different ways, but I need that. You know, I'm not one of these people that believes you have the solution for me. But I know this, y'all do. There are people within our fellowship that I call, like, my first sponsor made clear to me that I did not need to call him about financial advice. You know, he said, Not when we have people who've been successful with that for many, many decades within our sponsorship family. He said, all these people have been given to you by you getting me. And so what I learned from that was to build my network, not just within a sponsorship family. I'm talking about, that was just an example. That was one piece of this big puzzle of so many tools given to me to work on myself and to become better for y'all and for myself. And so, you know, all that, like I said, starts at the beginning of the day for me by connecting for guidance, for love, to be able to, you know, many times I'll sit there and ask for, I don't normally ask for something specific, but I will ask for the power to work on one spiritual principle, because I got to simplify it for me, man. I can recognize where I'm going way off track, and when I do, I ask to work on that spiritual principle that I need to counteract that character defect, you know, and ask for the power to come, because in the seventh step, I was taught that. You know, in the 12th step, like I said, we go back to that foundation of anonymity. I love the fact that I'm a part of We Today. You know, I was alone for so long. And that goes back to why was I always feeling alone no matter how many people were around me. Because I separated myself. I lived apart from. Today I am a part of. And I do that in many aspects of my life. Outside of the rooms, in many other places. And I was never capable of that. And that speaks for the program. The program and working it and applying it in my life is what's changed. And that all came to me by the power of something greater than myself. And so I depend on that. That's all I got.